Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me is my co-host, Jesse Hall. Jesse, how are you doing?
Can't complain. I'm doing well.
Yeah, same here. And, it's not quite the 2021 official season, you know, the new season kicked in yet, but we are really close. One of the last benchmarks before that is the franchise tag, which... You know, a few players got tagged today. I mean, recording this on Tuesday, March 9th. But before that, some big NFL news. Quarterbacks are always the biggest, of course, and so are the contracts. Dak Prescott does reach an extension with the Cowboys. 4 years, $160 million. Keeps him through the 2024 season. It seems as though, looking on SpotTrack, there's a fifth option as well in 2025, it seems. But regardless of that, the Cowboys have Dak for the near future.
They had to do something, right? I mean, you have to have a quarterback in this league, you know, either under a rookie contract where he's decent, or you got to pay a guy, right? So I think it's kind of good for both sides. They a lot of guarantees early. It's pretty front loaded where maybe they could, you know, 2024, they can get out of it if they want. So he gets paid, he gets guaranteed money, and hey, Dallas has their guy. So that Aaron Rodgers deal is looking a lot easier each time these guys sign, doesn't it?
For sure, right? It was there was a point where he was getting passed by guys like Derek Carr and Matthew Stafford. So he was like, oh, no, end that noise. I want to be at the top. And then, you know, you see the quarterbacks that have gotten signed higher than Rodgers. In a sense, it makes sense. Mahomes, Watson, now Prescott. Like, these are all young, elite-level quarterbacks. And I think maybe later on in this offseason, we'll actually kind of dive in to how, you know, how we feel about that exact ranking in the NFL. But, Dak Prescott to me is a better quarterback than Derek Carr. And, you know, all due respect to Stafford, Prescott's won a playoff game.
Yeah.
You know, I think Jesse and I agree that Stafford's a really good quarterback. Prescott has done more technically. And, the Lions, that's not really a great team to be on. And not, although, the Cowboys haven't been a model franchise either. And, he's had sustained success with them. Been a good team. Yeah, there's some years where they're losing records. But for the most part, his play has been tremendous throughout his rookie contract, which I don't think any of us were expecting from a third, fourth round pick.
Yeah, I mean, Dak's not the problem there, right? I mean, he might have to score 40 because that defense has holes all over it, but it's not the quarterback play that's their problem. They got that locked up, so they're good there. Now they looks like they're going to have to draft because that's a big chunk of money right there. But yeah, he's a good player, man, and that's the thing with, you know, these guys coming through. You know, each one's going to be garnering a pretty good size, you know, salary or big guarantee and stuff like that. So. Good for him. I hope he comes back 100% because that was an ugly injury. But good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Wish him the best of recovery. I think we expect he'll be ready week one. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. But of course, yeah, it's gruesome injuries like that. It's always difficult, regardless. And I think we've known Dak to be a hard worker. I mean, you have to be a quarterback just to get to the NFL, let alone succeed in the NFL. So we've already known that about him anyway. Seems like he's a pretty driven individual, and you know, I have nothing but respect for Dak Prescott personally, all the things that he stands for, and you know, again, model citizen. I think we talked about this with Deshaun Watson, right? Like, I haven't heard a lick of anything bad regarding Dak Prescott. So good on the Cowboys. Questionable decisions throughout that history of that organization, but at the very least, and you know, how they've handled this situation may have been questionable. I know everyone was wondering, you know, the Kirk Cousins, the tag, and then just let him walk, or was it going to end up being that? But you know, I'll give the Cowboys credit here. They got their franchise quarterback. It's important because in the NFL, you either do or you don't. And right now they do.
Yeah, 100%. Again, to hit on what you're saying about that too, you know, he's a guy where he's kept growing and getting better into the position, right? Like, here he came in. It's like, hey, this is an athletic guy with a good arm. And you've seen him, you know, just from year one to now become a all around full scale franchise quarterback. So he's driven, like you said. It seems like a model citizen from, you know, you don't hear nothing bad about him. That's the kind of guy you want to face your franchise. So not a Dallas fan, obviously. We're on the Green Bay Packer pod. But yeah, he's a good player, and they got their guy.
And I will say, I remember him coming into the in the league his rookie year, right? Cole Beasley was the guy for them because of his ability to separate. And I think throughout his career, Dak has always been really good at protecting the football. He does not want to put that ball in tough situations. What I think he has developed, like you said, Jesse, is throwing it into tighter windows, getting that confidence, getting the velocity, the accuracy, the perfect placement. That's why Dez Bryant struggled with Dak. It wasn't, you know, Dak hadn't quite learned to not just trust the receivers, but trust himself to make throws where Dez Bryant succeeded in the jump ball contested catch types, which he would usually come down with. And you saw Romo, you know, at his stage of his career when Dez Bryant came on, he recognized that talent. And yeah, I got to get him the ball, even if he's, you know, not open, NFL open quite. But, you know, Cole Beasley, that from the slot, especially that rookie year, you saw it. I believe he led the team in targets that year. And what you've seen is as the receivers have come, you now have a pretty decent receiver core of Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, and he is going downfield. He is getting those guys that aren't quite wide open, but, you know, trusting them to put the ball in the right place for the receivers to make the plays. And so, yeah, I think Dak's definitely evolved. I don't want to quite say elite yet, because I do think that is reserved for literally a handful of quarterbacks. I will say probably five, but he might be just on that cusp. I think him, Josh Allen, maybe in that category of guys that could be right on the precipice of that.
I'm super hard when we say elite. Like, yeah, tier one, I don't even think it's five. So he is in that tier two. And exactly what you're saying, like, he trusts, you know, he goes through his progressions and, like, 100%, you know, Cole Beasley was his safety blanket where it's like, oh, he went to him like, bam, if that first read's not there, Cole Beasley, where is he? And it was basically a dump off. And he became a full quarterback where he trusts his eyes. He trusts, hey, I can throw this guy open. I can get this in this tight window. So he's a heck of a player.
Back to the Packers quickly. I mean, everyone rags on them. All, you know, 30 years of franchise QB play. They only have two Super Bowls to show for it. Which, I mean, fair. But I also want to point, maybe it's more to just deflect blame, but Mike McCarthy has, in his career, had Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and now Dak Prescott. And it seems like that's, and he's, if he might get one Super Bowl appearance that he ended up winning out of that. But this is not, that's not a great track record for McCarthy either, considering that talent.
No, I mean, my signature phrase is, it's hard to win in the NFL, unless you're Tom Brady, who sold his soul to the devil. Sorry. But anyways, you have to have a defense too, right? This is ultimate team sport. Yeah, you have great quarterbacks. How many good defenses had McCarthy have? And yeah, that's on him too. When you're the coach, you got to make sure you have everything working. But yeah, like I said, like, and you said too, he has three awesome quarterbacks. There's no excuse on the offense, and they put up numbers, right? I mean, every one of Mike McCarthy's teams is solid on offense. So that was never really the problem. It's just they couldn't stop anybody besides that one season.
And I mean, to be fair, you're right. This Dallas defense isn't going to help them stop anybody. So it's not the best situation outside of the franchise quarterback, of course.
100%. Yeah. Now it sounds like they're losing their whole secondary, or maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
I don't know if it can get much worse. But yeah, speaking of franchise tags, the deadline was today, I guess, just about an hour ago. Now, you know, I suppose it hasn't moved back. We haven't heard any official word on if it will move back. We don't even really know the full salary cap yet. So teams are kind of going into this a little blind with these tags. So I'll just go through the list of franchise tag players. So various positions. We've got a few offensive linemen. Taylor Monton from the Carolina Panthers, tackle, as is Cam Robinson from the Jacksonville Jaguars. So they're both going to hit 13.6.
Yep. Cam Robinson, I am surprised, but whatever.
I think we talked about this when Brad was on. I've kind of been maybe a bigger Cam Robinson fan, thinking that the offensive line around him not performing, it's kind of like a Laremy Tunsil, right? Like, he's probably the best offensive lineman the Texans have, but he doesn't look good because you've got four guys that really aren't that great beside you, and nothing's going to look good or work. So I do think maybe Robinson, you know, unlucky in the sense that the line struggled around him. But yeah, I mean, for that, you know, for how he's played, and he has been injured a bit too, $13 million is a little steep. So it's definitely got to really bounce back for him.
Yeah. And the interior is really not that bad. They just paid their center and he's pretty decent. And they have Linder down there. He's okay. But yeah, it's the whole unit. I don't know. I guess I'm kind of working on a project with a few other guys where we're doing a mock off season right now. And Orlando Brown, right? If I'm Jacksonville, I'm talking to the Ravens because he wants out. He wants to play left tackle. That's why Cam Robinson to me is like, hey, we have draft capital. Let's go get Orlando Brown because that guy can play.
True. I do wonder just in that sense. I mean, if it'd be expensive, but would you consider keeping Robinson, moving him to right tackle and hoping it works there?
It all, yeah, if you can get Brown, yeah, of course, you try it out on the other side. I can't remember what the right tackle is, but he's younger too. So, yeah, let them battle it out. But, yeah, you're definitely, if you're giving this guy 13 mil, he better be playing, right?
Definitely, you got to think, right? I mean, they could pull the, I mean, didn't Gettleman do this, pull off the tag, and then they just walk as free agent, you don't have to pay them anymore. But you also don't have the $13 million to spend right now. Although, to be fair, the Jags do have a lot of cap space. So they it seems like they're a team that could overspend to keep a player, whether it's on the tag or just in terms of just a free agency contract.
When you're not paying a quarterback, you have that luxury, right? So, yeah, good for Cam Robbins. Well, I don't really know. The franchise tag really kind of sucks for the player. But, yeah, it is what it is.
One more offensive lineman, Brandon Scherff, for Washington. He was tagged last year. So even though he's a guard and normally the you know, based on tackles usually getting paid more than guards, usually that franchise tag amount is higher for tackles. But in this case, because Sheriff's being tagged twice, it actually is going to be apparently over 18 million for the 2021 franchise tag. So Washington's paying up for their guard that I believe they took in the first round.
Yeah, he was top 10 pick. I mean, he's a stud, right? I don't know why they don't have a long-term deal with him because, right, you could sign him to a 4 or 5 year deal and make him the highest paid guard in the league, and it's still cheaper than that second tag. So, yeah, that was second year tags, man. That's where you get busted. So they're paying him like a top left tackle.
Sticking with the line, because, that's where football is made, right? Only one defensive lineman. Actually, really only one front seven defensive player tagged. Leonard William with the New York Giants. I don't think it's a big surprise. Again, another player that's being tagged for a second year in a row. Career year and season in sacks for Leonard Williams last year. So now with the second year tag in a row, it'll be $19.3 million, so even higher than Sheriff's. So again, Giants paying up to keep their guy. See this. Washington, I guess. I mean, they did make the playoffs last year. So, but, losing record teams, Washington, Jacksonville, New York, overpaying to keep key players, because I guess that's when you're as talent strapped as those teams, you got to keep what you can.
Yeah. And I think that just gives them more time and options, too. Like you said, we don't know the cap yet. So you might see a tag and trade down the road, or, hey, we weren't able to work out a long-term deal yet because we don't know how much money we have. Granted, these teams do have a little bit of money to play with, but it could just be like, hey, until we see what the floor is with our cap, let's put the tag on you and then maybe we'll work something out.
So we're going to pass over those positions more towards the passing areas. We got actually three safeties that were hit with the tag. The other New York team, another New York player remaining, Marcus May, remains with the Jets on the tag. You've got Justin Simmons from the Denver Broncos also being tagged, as well as Marcus Williams from the New Orleans Saints. So three defensive backs. I don't think we're going to get to it. I think like the players Packers are targeting, I think we agree, is more corner. So seeing safeties off the market, I don't think it affects the Packers at all, really.
No, and those three are studs. I mean, all three of those are top 10 players. They really are. Simmons is a monster. Williams is still, they're all really young too. And Maine, even after, he's kind of left there by himself 2 years in a row now, he's really stepped up and is a really good football player. So safety is so, if you can cover and then come down in the box, it's so important to have good safety. So no surprise with those guys.
I'd say the only one that maybe surprised me was Williams, just knowing how the Saints cap situation. I didn't know that they'd be able to afford to tag anyone this year. Like they'd really hope on the long-term deals that you can move the money around. So I think that was the only thing that surprised me, not the player, but the team doing it.
Definitely. Yeah, they're in a bad situation right now with cap, especially they don't know. Well, I mean, I don't think Breeze is coming back. That's probably a good thing. But when you're not paying a quarterback, really, and you're in cap hell, Bears too, that's not good.
Now for the last two positions, and these two, in a sense, it might hurt the Packers, although I think we both got the sense they weren't going to get either of these players anyway, but both Chris Godwin and Allen Robinson tagged. Chris Godwin remaining with the Buccaneers. I guess the only unfortunate thing for Packers is the Allen Robinson remains in the division with the Bears. Would have liked to see him get out, but I mean, I don't know if they'll have the quarterback to exploit it anyway, but yeah, so Godwin, Robinson remain with their teams.
Yeah, those dang Bucks, man. Then they signed Levante David today too. So I mean, they're going to lose Shaq Barrett, I guess. But yeah, good moves. I mean, they're trying to keep that core together. No brainer. Bears, I mean, you let Robinson walk. Again, yeah, you don't have a quarterback, so who's going to get him the ball? But that guy's a heck of a football player. He really is. Like, when you got basically a high school quarterback play thrown to him and he still puts up numbers, that's a good football player.
Yeah, absolutely. I think both those players, it'd be, you know, different types of receivers, but both, I think, enter that upper echelon at the position. And Robinson's been pretty consistent for years. And as you mentioned, doing it with kind of a revolving door quarterback too. It hasn't just been the same player. Like, he's had to change in you know, a few times, even on each team. Whereas, you know, Godwin, I guess Godwin did have a season where they were going back and forth between Winston and Fitzpatrick. For the most part, though, it has been Winston and now Brady. Like, that's a, you know, you'll take those bad years with Winston if it means you get Brady at the end, I think. And I mean, in a sense, Godwin, it's a big price tag. You know, it's a big payday for him with the tag. Probably, you know, some players might be more, I'm sure between the two, Godwin and Robinson, I'm sure Robinson's much more upset getting tagged than Godwin is. Team situation, quarterback there, but also, I guess Robinson's had his big payday already. I mean, that's what he signed. He chose to go to the Bears on a big contract, right? I guess this is Godwin's first one, but he's still young enough that even next year, if the Bucks do let him walk on the open market, he, you know, should command tons. Or, you know, he gets a long-term deal with the Bucks here. So I don't think Godwin would be as upset as Robinson.
Yeah, well, yeah. So first knock is I saw something on Twitter. It said, remember, Allen Robinson had an offer with the Packers and he turned it down to be a Bear. So that's on him. So, you know, every shot I can take at Bears, I will. But anyways, and Chris Godwin, right? I mean, that team has three number one receivers. What a beautiful situation to be in, right, for him. And I think he turns 25 this year, like, he'll be 25 when the season's over with. So he's going to get a second big payday. So that, it's not going to hurt him. He was hurt a lot last year. So if he has a monster year this year, which there's no reason to believe he won't, especially, I mean, they pass the ball around, but if he finds the end zone or has huge yards per catch, he's a number one easy. So he's going to get paid next year. So the only thing with tags, I hate it. Cause if a guy gets hurt, you know, I'm all about guys getting paid, right? These guys work hard. You know, if he gets hurt, that could really screw him long term. But if he stays healthy, this guy's getting paid next year big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Just hope all players stay healthy, even the ones on the Vikings and Bears and Lions, even, you know, kneecaps aside. Okay, no, I don't mean that. That's their words, not ours. But just quickly to relate this to the Packers, I mean, we did talk about it last episode. Were the Packers potentially going to tag Aaron Jones? Deadlines passed, and yeah, Aaron Jones remains that he will be a free agent, I guess, next week. So it does appear that the Packers and the Packers in terms of pricing aren't really close. So I think we expect Aaron Jones is gone and walking. And I don't think we're too upset about that. I think we're more upset that maybe Corey Linsley's going.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, you know, 2010 was the last time, or over a decade ago was the last time they used a tag. And I couldn't even tell you who it was on, so you probably remember. But we didn't see it happening. They say they're still in talks. If he got offered what they're kind of saying, you know, top five money and without the guarantees, it's just not going to work in Green Bay. So go get paid. Let the Dolphins just spend huge on you, because it just seems like that's a perfect marriage.
Yeah, and I mean... part of his value is tied to the fact that he catches so many passes. So I think that's going to help him in free agency, certainly as kind of that, you know, I'm not just a runner, I'm a pass catcher. That aspect, that's so coveted. That's how you get paid. You look at Christian McCaffrey's big contract, not saying he's going to get that. I don't think that's the, but it's sort of a kind of a good point of reference that he's probably, I mean, you got Kenyon Drake, who's, I think, also capable of doing that. Chris Carson might be, you might argue he's a better power runner than Jones, but I think overall Jones is the class of free agency for a running back. And I think that's part of it too, is as much as the Packers offer is good, he clearly thinks he can do better. And maybe as the number one free agent at your position, even at a position that seems to get devalued, probably is enough to get him the price tag he wants.
Yeah, I mean, he's head and shoulders above all these other guys. I know you're big into fantasy, and Kenyon Drake was a hot commodity last year, but really, he's good. But I mean, he wasn't even a starter in college. Like, he's decent, but he's not Aaron Jones. Like, he's got big play ability, but Aaron Jones showed the last 2 years, get this guy touches, because he can make things happen. And that's not a knock on Drake. I just think Aaron Jones is special like that. Now, again, it's nice to have, you know, hey, we had Jamal Williams to help him out, because I don't, there's a lot of games where he kind of disappeared if, you know, we just asked him to run the ball. You have to get him space. And in today's NFL, guess what? That's perfect, especially if you put him in a situation with Miami, young quarterback, get the ball out, you know, kind of be that outlet valve. He's going to get things done. You know, I see him in Miami. That's why I keep referring to them. But someone's going to pay higher than the Packers, that's for sure. So he's going to get his.
Now to the portion of the episode where I think we're, the main focus will be is last week, we talked about the players the Packers were going to be losing, including Aaron Jones, or likely losing, the upcoming free agents. Who are the restricted free agents? Who are they might likely keep of the unrestricted free agents? And, you know, what it takes to get the bottom end of that roster, the restricted free agents, exclusive rights guys. But this week it's, what could they possibly bring in? And yes, you know, I think last week we talked about who we expect them to re-sign, but from outside the organization, who are they going to go after? Just real quick, I'd actually like to see them get Kenyon Drake. I think he would complement A.J. Dillon quite well. I know last year in Arizona, they didn't use him as a pass catcher at all. They preferred Chase Edmonds in that role. But you got to think, the amount of targets that go to the running back with the Packers, there's plenty enough to go for both Dillon and Drake. So I like that idea of a really good, kind of good in space, pass catching back. And I think he does profile similar to Jones, like you were mentioning, just not the same caliber, but it's also not going to cost as much. We'll see. Maybe he, who knows what happens on the open market. I know Arizona tagged him last year, obviously not doing the case this year, did not retain that tag. So, I mean, hitting free agency, I think Drake would actually fit pretty well with the Packers. It's all about cost, though.
And that's the only thing with him, right? Like, he's a guy you want on your team. You know, like, I was comparing him to Aaron Jones. I wasn't really knocking him. He's not Aaron Jones. But yeah, as a complimentary back for the cost of, you know, what's the cost, basically what you're going to get back, you know, Jones is going to basically set the market, right? So it's all going to fall in after that. If you can get Drake cheap, or, you know, a team friendly deal with incentives, perfect. You know, another guy just like that, I think that would even be cheaper, is a guy like James White. Perfect pass catching kind of back that you can use in space. I mean, dang, he had what, 20 catches in a Super Bowl? Like, that guy won that Super Bowl that year. You know, that'd be another compliment guy. Just you got the Thunder with Dillon, and then I think we're going to draft a guy too. But, you know, you have to have three backs, you know, for a whole season. Kenyon Drake would be a perfect fit. So would James White.
Yeah, I'm less inclined for like a Chris Carson, for instance, just because I think both Carson and A.J. Dillon are capable of catching the football. But is it, you know, is the route running there? Is the explosibility to get upfield quick, which is something that I've loved with Aaron Jones watching that with the Packers. It's not just dump offs. It's he's running routes. He's getting down there, running seam routes. He's taking sometimes linebackers with him 20, 30 yards downfield, and it creates mismatches, kind of like how tight ends create mismatches against smaller defensive backs. It's how you use the running backs in that way too. And we know Matt LaFleur clearly has liked to use them. We've seen it with Aaron Jones the last 2 years. So getting that type of in space athletic speed. Again, that's why I think Drake and White, both, you know, White has such a pedigree of pass catching, so consistent at that. Not the greatest runner, but I would also like to see him run behind the Packers' offensive line. And, you know, assuming they can, again, I think maybe this year, 2021, maybe expect a step back off the 2020 production where they were an elite unit. I think we can use the word elite there properly. In almost all every metric, they were top five. I know Football Outsiders has their breakdown, I didn't see them. I think there was one ranking they were like close to the bottom of the league. It was actually the power ranking, short yardage stuff, which I guess we did see that happen a few times, get stuffed on third and ones and things like that. But outside of that, they were across the board in the top 10 of every offensive line category. Again, might take a step back without Corey Linsley. David Bakhtiari also hurt. But I still think for James White, that would be a good line to be running behind, maybe better than what he's ever had with the Patriots.
Yeah, by far. I mean, and, you know, that's, we also weren't using A.J. Dillon for a lot of those situations either, where, like, I mean, I know a lot of times, like, hey, as good as Aaron Jones is, like, hey, third and one, bring in the bulldozer, put in Dillon. So we're going to see that next year too, right? So like you said, it might not be the same line because we're going to lose Linsley. But at the same time, maybe that changes kind of our look and what we're using. As far as Chris Carson, I don't even entertain that, because then you would bring back Jamal Williams, right? Because I think Jamal Williams, for what we do, he's better receiver in his pass pros top of the line. So the Chris Carson thing, I just don't think it fits. I agree with you there.
Because the thing he does best is what we expect AJ Dillon does best as well. It's the power through contact. You know, Chris Carson, a little smaller than Dillon, so maybe able to get the pads lower, but you know, I still think with Dillon, he doesn't necessarily run as big as he looks either. He's not a full upright runner. Sometimes you see running backs smaller than him kind of get caught upright. So yeah, I think unfortunately that's why again, like, Williams is great because of the pass protection, really, like that's almost ideal. Like, if Williams costs less than Drake, costs less than James White, or around the same amount, you're probably just better off keeping him. I think I'd probably prefer that. He knows the system, and he's shown the ability as a receiver as well. He can also get downfield and make some catches. You're not the same explosive speed aspect that Jones has, or maybe even what Kenyon Drake would have, but I think you could afford to lose that if you know you're getting, I mean, out of all those players, maybe even James White included, Williams is probably the best guy in pass protection. Chris Carson maybe in that same tier, but Williams is really, you know, and he already came in good at it, like wasn't horrible at it, but really has developed and gotten better at it every year.
Yeah, and the big thing, you know, this guy's loved in the locker room. He's a great personality. I mean, that matters, right? Like, if you've already had that, and if cost is pretty close, you bring him back. Like, dude, like this, like you said, he knows our system, but he's you just want to be around the guy. And if you have that guy in the locker room, that's perfect fit. So why change something? If you can bring him back for what you would do to get somebody else, keep what you already know.
Unlike the Jimmy Graham, Jordy Nelson situation. Yeah.
Yeah. What is? Well,
I'm sorry to bring that up, but that still angers me.
Not a good trade-off, but yeah, moving along.
But actually, we'll talk about wide receivers, not so much tight ends. I think we know where that settles. We talked about that last week, so go back to last week's episode. The wide receiver position, I guess it's one where looking forward, there isn't much. We already talked about it again last week. No one signed beyond 2021. Marcus Valdes-Scantling's rookie contract is ending. Lazard's a restricted free agent this year already. So not even looking next year, they still don't even technically have him under contract yet either. And then Adams, his big extension he signed is up as well. So is this the period to go in after a guy that you can get on a few years to kind of bridge that gap to, okay, we at least have one body at wide receiver going into next season? Jesse, you wrote an article recently, five targets overall, not just wide receiver, but overall that the Packers should target. And you weren't talking about guys like Godwin and Robinson thinking, okay, either getting tagged or even like a guy like Kenny Golladay is probably going to command way too much. So start at wide receiver. You had a name that I know I was talking about last year, even during the draft. Can they trade to get this guy? I think there was rumors about him, and the Panthers were interested in moving him during the draft. And I thought the Packers, give up the second, whatever. AJ Dillon, don't need that. Go get Curtis Samuel. But now they might get him in free agency.
I think he fits so perfect. And he broke out last year. I mean, this guy was averaging over 18 yards a catch. Guess what? He can go in your backfield. He runs a 4.3 40. And he's not small. Like, he's compact. He is like a way more athletic and stronger Randall Cobb.
Exactly what I was about to say.
He can do everything for you. Like, I don't know, like the options and what everything Matt LaFleur wants to do. You put this guy on the field, you can line him up all over the place and it'll work. I just think the fit is so good, you know, and I think with the other receivers, you know, the big ones like you're talking about with Golladay and stuff like that, even Will Fuller, Matt LaFleur loves him. I didn't even put him in that article because there was no reason to. But yeah, Curtis Samuel in this offense, I don't know how you stop it. Like, it's just a weapon. So yeah, I'm gushing over here just talking about him. And I'm sure my dreams will get crushed if we don't get him. But if he ends up in Green Bay, watch out, because this wide receiver core just went to this whole offense went to another level.
Yeah, I agree. He would be, you know, you don't need to have a guy like Tyler Irvin as much as we do like him. Samuel does that better, but he's also a deep downfield threat, as you mentioned, or he can play in the slot, you know, run.
He's got great hands too. He's got everything.
Yeah. Yeah. He could, the athleticism, you can run, you know, he's basically Tyler Irvin and Marcus Valdes-Scantling all in one player. And while he's small, he's got enough, also a bit of jump to him to kind of get up there and make somewhat contested catches, obviously not to an Allen Robinson extent, but you know, he plays bigger than his frame as well, I find.
I mean, even go to the game the last time the Packers played him. We couldn't cover him. Like, you, I mean, and the Panthers have some good receivers. They really do. And that guy was the guy that gave us headaches because, one, you find matchups and you exploit them. Where if you're moving this guy around and using motion, there's no nickel that's going to cover him. There's not many number two cornerbacks that are going to cover him. And then you got a guy like Adams. This is going to take away over-the-top help on Adams. So, like, it just makes everybody better. I don't know what he's going to command on the market, but it just makes too much sense. And like we're talking about, we don't have any receivers after 21. I can see them reworking a deal with Adams. But then where's the leverage? You know, like MVS and guys like that, especially if he has another good year, they're going to leverage themselves out of town. So you need to find this next guy and lock him up. And like, this wouldn't be a short-term deal. Like, you lock him up. So Curtis Samuel's my guy. Like, that's my guy.
Unfortunately, a guy coming off his rookie contract wants to get paid. And especially if he's getting locked up long-term, he's going to want to make as much as he possibly can. So I do think it's one of those things where we're trying not to get too excited about it, because it does seem as though the Packers are a little behind on where other teams will be in terms of bidding on him.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, and it's all depends, you know, okay, yeah, you know, if the Jets come calling or, you know, something like that, you know, yeah, they might offer you more, but is it all about the money, or do you want to be a competitor and maybe take a little bit less? And I can't fault the guy for doing either. But then at the same time, if a team like Jacksonville comes calling, hey, we're going to get this stud quarterback coming in and you're a part of this future, we can't compete with that. They have like $84 million when we're just trying to get to zero right now. So, yeah, I don't want to get too excited, but Curtis Samuel, hell of a football player. Any offense that has him is way better.
So he was number one in your article. Maybe we won't say everyone that's in the article. Let the fans go in and take a look at it. But I really liked the player you had at number two as well. So it was William Jackson.
Yep, 100%. And that's a good football player, too. You know, the Bengals, for everything you want to say about the Bengals, that guy can play. The Bengals actually have nice pieces. They just don't have a good overall team. And why they would let him walk out of that building, I don't know why. They say they want to keep him. I don't know how much he wants to garner. There's a lot of things going on there. But if he hits the market, I think he's the best cornerback on the market. You have some other guys with more experience, but they're older. You know, this guy's young. He's super fast again, super athletic, like all the athletic abilities there. You pair him with Jaire Alexander, you know, and you can let him play zone and do different things instead of always following around the number one receiver. That guy can play football. So, yeah, heck of a corner. He might set the market, though, because I'm sure other people smarter than me realize how good he is. So,
another guy coming off the rookie contract, right? Like, these guys want to get paid, especially then. They know this is the time. This is the year. Regardless of the financial situations of the NFL, that's those teams' problems. They need to, you know, look out for themselves, because they know that the NFL teams really aren't. But I, you know, part of the reason I mentioned that. So back to the comments about Curtis Samuel, you were saying, I don't remember how much they moved him around in that game. I know a little bit, but I think for the most part, it was just Kevin King couldn't cover him. I think that was why he got so open all the time, which, again, Packers losing Kevin King, regardless, probably needed to upgrade anyway. And at the very least, William Jackson can cover receivers downfield. That's always been Kevin King's biggest weakness. He's done so many things well, but the one weakness is unfortunately the worst weakness to have, because when he messes up, it might mean a touchdown's being scored. Oh, the guy can't cover underneath that well. Oh, that's fine. They have him always in zone, and then he can, you know, and then hopefully he tackles well. You know, if that's the weakness, you can kind of shadow that. But when the weakness on an NFL cornerback is they can't cover deep, A, that's easy to exploit. You just run a deep receiver past him, and B, it's when it goes wrong, the big consequences for the defense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, knuckleheads like us, I think I wrote an article last summer in a matchup, and I said the longer that the play goes on against Kevin King, the worse it's going to be, because if it's deep or something like that, it just seems like bad things are going to happen. Right. You know, he gets to play some zone and be off the guy and plays in front of him and it's quick. Sure. Yeah. He'll come up and tackle, you know, Kevin King can do that, but ugh, yeah, if it goes downfield, it's bad. And William Jackson does not have that problem. So especially, you know, kind of what the system Joe Barry wants to run, they're going to play that, you know, cover three where he gets to play, you know, his third over there. And you want to go deep on this guy? Good luck. So the fit would be good again, but his fit would also be good with 31 other teams. So we'll see what happens.
What complicates things for the Bengals specifically? You're meant asking, okay, why did they let him go? They're also a team that's kind of cornerback. They're losing another cornerback in free agency, Mackenzie Alexander, formerly of the Vikings, I believe. And so we've seen him a little bit. Is that also another option that the Packers could go against if the, you know, so let's say the Bengals actually do come to a agreement with Jackson before the, you know, within the next few days and he's off the market, is thinking that if they sign him big enough that it's coming and Alexander's for sure hitting free agency and available?
Yeah. So yeah, I put Alexander in with a few other guys where it's like they're options, right? So I think the best thing, like, especially with this new system, you want the bigger type corner that, you know, you're comfortable in zone, not going to get picked on over the top. And, you know, like Alexander's still young and he's had struggles. No doubt. But in the right system, I think he's feasible. I don't think he's going to break the bank. And he might be looking for a short contract, a prove a deal, because he's still young. No one's going to sign him to a huge, you know, second contract right now. You know, so he's kind of in that situation where, you know, new system, you know, change of scenery, guys really, more times than not, hey, it might be good for both the team and the player. So he's in the category with a guy like Xavier Rhodes to me, who was really good in Minnesota. Then his last year there, he was absolutely bad, terrible, awful. Goes to the Colts, little kind of different system, works out perfect. I mean, he's a big corner, right? He's 6'2", like 215, worked out perfect. He had a nice bounce back year last year. He might be another guy for a 1 or 2 year rental, would fit perfect in what Green Bay wants to do. So I kind of have him in that stuff, you know, Alexander, I mean, Mackenzie Alexander and Xavier Rhodes. I kind of group them together with the same situation.
I was just thinking, if they sign Mackenzie Alexander next to Jair Alexander, I don't know if that's brilliant or just going to annoy us. So maybe that's something to avoid. That's what got me thinking about it, too. I guess the one thing I would say is I see Rhodes as much more likely of signing that 1 year contract than Alexander, who, I mean, that's what he did last year, right? Coming off his rookie contract. The Vikings just couldn't afford to keep him. We're going full rookies on the defense, especially in the secondary. And so he signed a $4 million deal 1 year last year to kind of, okay, I want to get, because I think with the Vikings, he played more of the nickel corner, right? I think he went to the Bengals thinking, I have the opportunity to start on the outside and I want to do that. And I'll do it for $4 million, thinking that at least I get out there, get that production team, see me as that outside number one or number two corner, and then can get paid like that. So I don't know that Alexander's going to want to do another 1 year deal. That's the only thing. So if I feel like the Packers want him, they would have to go long term, whereas they could afford to maybe 1 year Rhodes. And then, I mean, you know, Jair Alexander's extension is going to be coming up. So maybe it actually is good to kind of go with the 1 year rentals for that other corner spot for now. And maybe that's something to address in the draft and kind of, or do both, address it in free agency and the draft. I mean, I think it's the Packers' biggest need. I'll be honest. I think that secondary is almost complete, but it's a massive hole, that other cornerback spot on the outside. And while the safety position is so important, if you don't have the corners to cover one-on-one, you're drawing that safety over to that side every other time, and teams can figure that out and exploit that in other ways. So it makes such a huge weakness. It telegraphs so much. So I really think they got to get it right. And again, maybe that's double dip free agency and the draft. But just to plug Jesse's article one last time, between Alexander and Rhodes, one of those former Vikings, as much as Jesse doesn't like Vikings, was willing to write about one of them in that article. Which one, you'll have to, again, read and find out. But do you agree with me, Jesse, that corner is the most important position for the Packers to address this offseason?
Oh, I mean, you took every word out of my mouth right there. I'm just sitting here. I'm like, yeah, you get a rental right now, and it's a good situation to be in, because this draft is loaded with cornerback talent. I'm telling you, you're going to get guys that are falling into the second round that in normal drafts would be the top half of the first round talents. So yeah, you get that 1 year or 2 year rental, unless you can get William Jackson, but you get those, you know, a short deal with like Xavier Rhodes, I think it would be a perfect situation. And then you draft a guy and you let him kind of, you know, he's still going to play, right? I mean, everybody's playing three, Chandon Sullivan, he's good, but let this guy beat him out, right? You know, just, well, I shouldn't say Chandon Sullivan's good. He's serviceable. He's a star. He can play. He can play nickel. But if you bring in a rookie, like, hey, Greg Newsom from Northwestern today ran a 4.340 again, and he looked the best out of every corner I think I've seen. Like, just athletically, that guy is going to be really good. You bring in a guy like that, you know, and you have him play behind Jair and like a guy like Xavier Rhodes, you're set in 2022 with, you know, like Newsom and Jair. So it's the biggest need by far, I think, because you got to have good corner play. You can never have enough, but you bring in a vet that you can trust, and then you can have that rookie grow and learn. And then you also add depth too, because hey, guys get hurt. So we might draft two corners this year. You just might do it because I, Josh Jackson, it's time to go. It's time to move on. Who do we have? Oh, that's the area on defense that you get that other guy. This defense is locked in.
Yeah, that's a good point. And again, I agree with you. Sullivan's serviceable. He plays nickel corner better than Kevin King played on the outside. So, you know, it's not that level. I mean, in spite of what the PFF grades may say, it there is a difference between the two. I definitely much prefer having Sullivan. I mean, to be fair, Sullivan's a restricted free agent, so they may decide not to tender him. He's not guaranteed of being back either. And if that's the case, then they suddenly have the nickel corner position to fill as well. I'm having a hard time. What do you think the second most important position is to fill, either free agency or the draft? Like just in general, what do you think the position of need to address after corner is?
That's a tough one. I don't know if it's really neat. So the offensive line, I don't think we're going to bring in a vet because I think we're going to trust the young guys. But I think we're gonna draft, you know, pretty early a guy that can play. You know, you might get a guy, you know, that might play right tackle. You know, you get a guy like Taven Jenkins from Oklahoma State. That guy you can plug and play at right tackle right away. He's a bully. He's mean. Young Brian Bulaga kind of guy. You can get a guy. What's his name from Michigan? I'm losing his name right now. But that guy, I mean, he handled Chase Young 2 years ago. He handled him. That's another guy that you can bring in. So I'm O-line. I don't know if it's necessarily a need in the starting five because we'll make it work, especially when Bach gets back. But the future needs to happen. I mean, we're going to need a future player somewhere. So that's one of them. Wide receiver, again, I don't think it's a need on top this year, but down the road in depth, you want to bring in a player. Curtis Samuel, hint, hint.
By the way, I don't really know college well. Just quickly looking up, is it Jalen Mayfield?
That's it. Yep. Yeah. I don't know why I've done so much stuff with it today. I'm thinking all these names. I'm like, how do I forget him? He's really good.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I have no idea who it is. So I know the name, but Jesse actually knows the player. So listen to Jesse on that.
Yeah, no, he's a beast, man. Like young, he played left tackle, but he's a plug and play right tackle right away. Like I said, like 2019 when he played against Chase Young couldn't do nothing with him. Like, yeah, Michigan can't beat Ohio State, but hey, he beat Chase Young pretty good. Like that tape was awesome.
Yeah. So I am a little torn. I do feel like the way you compartmentalize it, like in terms of a draft, I think. The tackle position is something I thought they should have addressed it last year, I'll be honest. To draft three offensive linemen and to all be interior offensive linemen, I thought I didn't quite understand that either. Although we did see the plans of, okay, no, Jenkins can play tackle, Turner can play tackle. How, you know, tackle turned out to be a lot deeper than we thought. And I think part of it was just assuming that, you know, those guys were going to stay guards, I think. Maybe that was the too much of an assumption on my part in particular.
I think it's me too. I mean, Elton Jenkins, it all depends what they do with him. I mean, you can kick him outside. There's your tackle for the future, you know?
And then in which case they may look actually to more towards another interior lineman to draft.
100%.
Maybe that's where they want to go. They want to draft. They'll pay the veteran edge guys because they know that's, you know, you don't really want rookies learning to out on the edge. And, you know, you draft the guys to play in the middle. And then as they develop, can they play on tackle? Then you move them out. And I think that might be how the Packers address it too. So maybe they don't draft a tackle, but I don't know. Again, right now, as it stands, assuming Bakhtiari starts the year on injured reserve, Yosh Niemann is the swing tackle. I don't really feel great about that.
No. And like what you said too, you're 100% right. Yeah. Would you rather have, if you have a rookie play, you'd rather have him play inside, right? Like you can hide a guard way better than a guy on an island at tackle. And that's the nice thing with the Packers this year. You can draft the best guy because we don't have outside of corner right now just this huge glaring need. But you can get a good player and you can plug them in somewhere and your team gets better overall. So, yeah, you know, if that tackle's there, you take them, but you're not reaching. So that's the nice – I think the Packers right now are in such a good situation where if you want to get that explosive athlete somewhere, You can go get him. You can get it. You know, you get Zavian Collins that can kind of play rush, inside linebacker, everything. You know, JOK is my favorite guy right there from Notre Dame, but he's going to go top 15. So we won't even talk about him. But Packers are sitting really good where it's outside of corner, which we think is their biggest need. It's a depth guy that, hey, if he can play and beat somebody out, the Packers just got better.
I agree with pretty much everything you said there. Not so much debate on this show here, but I think the perception is the Packers desperately need wide receivers, right? And I don't really believe that's the case. And honestly, even if they did, I don't know that that's the best investment of resources, especially to spend big in free agency. That's why, as much as it'd be great to have Curtis Samuel, what he's expected to make. I mean, he was a second round pick. I mean, everyone, it's not that it wasn't so shocking that he's been successful. I know he was expected more to be a running back coming out, but I mean, with the Panthers, he's shown he's probably a far better wide receiver than he maybe ever would have been a running back. And so I don't know what the point of that was, but yeah, I would love to have Samuel, but I'm hesitant to think that spending big on him and spending, you know, the Rodgers contract, but then also assuming they extend Adams and spending all that money on three players on offense, I don't know. It doesn't seem to me the best investment of resources. I do like the way the Packers, okay, that one draft, okay, we're just going to hit receiver three times, and hopefully if one of them hits, we've got them as a starter for the rest of their rookie contract. And they, I mean, it, you know, like it or not, I know some people are maybe a little harsh on him, but Marcus Valdes-Scantling has been a success for that reason, especially considering where he was drafted. I believe, wasn't he a sixth round pick?
Yeah, he was a sixth round pick that year. Yep.
So I almost feel like, is that what they do in the draft? So maybe what everyone wanted last year for them to draft a receiver, it doesn't necessarily have to be a round one guy, but I feel like this is maybe the year where it really makes sense. Although I just said it made pretty much, did make sense last year to do it too, but I'm obviously not Brian Gutekunst.
Well, another problem with this draft, like with corner, this draft is loaded with wide receiver talent. Like last year they said, oh, it's a historic wide receiver draft. This one's better. This one has so much talent. You know, on day two and day three, you can get those slot kind of guys that are going to make impacts where you're never going to ask them to be number one, but as a compliment to your offense, they're going to be monsters. You know, I just did that profile on Eskridge, which he's going to go in the second round. That dude's got Steve Smith style all over him. This guy's a dog. You get a guy like that, because I agree with you. You know, I want Curtis Samuel, but for what price? I don't want to pay him $13, $14 million. You know, if you get him for 9 or 10 long term, cool. You can make it work. You know, the Packers did that with Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson, you know, for a long time. You had your 1-2 and you're set. But you can find these other players. Marquis Stevenson, a small school kid. He's going to be a heck of a wide receiver for somebody. A little bit of a body catcher. Now I'm getting to my draft stuff. But you can find these guys in the third, fourth, fifth round. So cornerback and wide receivers, they're going to draft one of each for sure.
I mean, we've both touched on draft a lot, so I think it's acceptable. The one last thing I want to say, I think the one position where I wouldn't say it's more of a need, but I think alongside offensive line, alongside wide receiver, and I would also put the defensive line with that. Yes, we expect Kingsley Keke to take a step up, and you know maybe they return Montrevious Adams, who's probably not going to be a really sought-after unrestricted free agent at all, really, so probably could get him pretty cheap, like we mentioned last episode. But I do wonder, in that same vein, not necessarily the maybe a little bit more pedigree, but I'm just looking at like some free agent defensive linemen. And one that really struck me was Solomon Thomas. Coming off the injuries, and while the San Francisco defense has been great, it's been a lot of the, especially the defensive line, it's been a lot of contributions from others that have really pushed that above. And I almost wonder if, you know, they need to pay so many other guys that I think it's inevitable that Solomon Thomas will be a free agent, especially coming off the injury, might be pretty cheap and lowering that value. I wouldn't mind putting a guy like Solomon Thomas next to Kenny Clark. Again, it's all cost dependent, but what do you think about that move?
Okay, so Solomon Thomas, he's such a tweener. Like, you know, he got drafted, what, I think he was second or third overall. Guy was a monster, right? But he's doesn't really have the body type for an outside guy, even though he's explosive. And he's a smaller, like, kind of Mike Daniels kind of body, you know, to play more of like a three tech. But yeah, like you said, if you can use him like inside exclusively just for like pass rush, you know, and don't ask him to like hold the edge and all that, next to Kenny Clark, one-on-one, he can beat guards. Yeah, his career, he's not going to garner much. Like, listen, this guy, he's got what, less than 10 career sacks. he just didn't fit. So I think a new change of scenery, the guy is still a good athlete. Why not kick the tires on it? That's a good idea. You know, he's not going to break the bank. You bring him in, you try him out. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It's not good. It's all upside with him.
Yeah, I'd like to see that part of that rotation, him and Kingsley Keke. Like, that's good. I mean, they're probably almost always going to play between Clark and either Rashawn Gary or Za'Darius Smith. So, you know, that whoever that player is, that other defensive tackle, is never going to be the main focus of a defense, which I guess, again, that's kind of what he did with the 49ers, right? There's so many other guys. You know, I guess last year was really, you know, DeForest Buckner leaving. He was expected to take the step up, but then again, the season-ending injury early on in the campaign kind of wrecked that. So teams never really got to see him as the impact difference maker in the middle. And so, you know, it's all it takes is one team that to kind of believe in that draft pedigree. Like I think third overall, I think that was the Mitch Trubisky year where they were probably going to take him second overall, but then the Bears offered the farm to trade up one pick to pick the wrong quarterback.
John Lynch took the Bears to the woodshed.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could have been worse. He could have taken Nathan Peterman, but it was one of those things where, you know, he clearly went third overall and no one batted an eye on it. Like, everyone was confused about the trade up to get Trubisky. I don't think anyone was too overly like, oh my god, that was such a bad pick at the time. I think everyone thought, I thought Watson was the best. A lot of people thought that too. So it's a little surprising to not see Watson go first, but I don't think anyone questioned the 49ers in that case. Like, okay, yeah, you got the guy you're going to take anyway and the extra pick. So that draft pedigree and evaluation is still maybe there in some GMs and scouts' minds. Maybe that's enough to push that value up a little higher than it should be. But if it's not, then I think the Packers are a perfect team to kind of swoop them up. And like you said, a reclamation project. And if you know, the money is indifferent everywhere else and he has a chance to compete, not just for a starting job, but also compete for a title with the Packers, that's a good pull too.
Yeah, I mean, and that's in typical Packer fashion, right? You wait around and it's, after all the dust settles after week one and everybody goes crazy spending, that's a bargain guy that, you know, week two you bring him in and hey, this is an offer you put on the table and he might leave town and go see if he can get more. And if he doesn't, you might get a guy where, hey, you bring him into camp, he might flourish. You know, he might end up being a guy that can really help your football team. So, yeah, like you said, you know, he got drafted high for a reason. He's got all the athletic tools. It just didn't work out, you know, and it happens all the time in the NFL. Like, I'm not going to say, oh, my God, he's going to come to Green Bay and be a superstar. But, hey, he's still young. Kick the tires on him.
I think we'll kick the tires on the outro now, end of this episode. But, of course, if you know, you the listeners have any particular Packers free agent targets you would like to discuss or any topics in future episodes you'd like us to talk about, let us know. You can follow us on Twitter at @FPC_Packers. You'll get all the updates on when the podcasts are coming out, but also all the articles, not just from Full Press Coverage Packers, but Full Press Coverage in general. You also can follow your co-hosts individually. Jesse's at @Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. And as always, download the Full Press Coverage app. It's available for free on Android and iOS stores, and you get access to all of the great written content from Full Press Coverage, all the podcasts, as well as everything on the Full Press Radio Network. Access to that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Again, all that for free on the Full Press Coverage app. So yeah, next episode, we'll probably get answers to the questions we asked today. You know, who are the Packers signing free agency? How does that all look out? I mean, who are the players the Packers are losing? So not just questions from this episode, but from the last couple episodes. So it really does technically kick off the 2021 season officially. That's how the league year resets. So I guess this is, I suppose this is technically our last 2020 episode, even though it's been 3 months. But Jesse, any final thoughts for this final episode before free agency?
No, yeah, go Pack, go. It's going to be an interesting couple weeks coming up, so I look forward to the next one.
And as always, I look forward to talking to all of you next time on the Full Press Packers Pod.